couple of big thanks to Darren for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, March 5th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Keith Tracy chats Champions League, Nadine Doherty reviews Ladies Football League action and looks forward to Congress this weekend, while Aoife Murray brings us up to date on the Camogie Leagues. Plus, Damien Lawler has the latest GAA news stories and we'll round up the rest of today's sports news headlines. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087-187-9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome along to the show. Good evening, Keith Tracy. How are you?
I'm great, Shane. How are you?
Very well. Very, very well. Thank you very much. Some news headlines, Keith, to go through before I pick your brains on all of the Champions League action, reviewing last night, previewing this evening and keeping an eye on the early kickoff this evening, which I can tell you it is Feyenoord 0, Inter 0 after 20 minutes in that one. In rugby news though, Munster have confirmed that JJ Hanrahan will return for a third stint at his home province at the start of next season. Currently at Connacht, he began his career at Munster where he made his senior debut in 2012 and was the province's Young Player of the Year in 2014. Hanrahan is the fourth new signing for next season, along with centre Dan Kelly, prop Michael Milner and hooker Lee Barron. Meanwhile, Connacht have confirmed the two-year contract renewal for Dave Heffernan, further extending his long career with his home province. He also has won 7 caps for the senior Ireland team. England have dropped Marcus Smith and Henry Slade in a dramatic shake-up of the backline for Sunday's Six Nations game with Italy at the Allianz Stadium. Smith is demoted to the bench to make way for the recall of Elliot Daly at fullback, while Slade is jettisoned from the 23 altogether, with Fraser Dingwall making his first test appearance since last year's championship. Jamie George is named at hooker after 2 replacement appearances to win his 100 cap. In association football, an independent appeal committee of the FAI has rejected Derry City's appeal for wrongful dismissal following Carl Winchester's red card in Derry City's SSE at Tristy Men's Premier Division fixture against St. Pat's on the 28th of February. In accordance with the FAI disciplinary regulations, Winchester will serve a 2-match suspension. Did you see the tackle, Keith?
Yeah, a bit harsh. I did think it was a little bit harsh at the time. I was sitting in the stands. I wasn't working, but I looked at it in real time and I was unsure. I went home. I've had a look at the highlights and yeah, I do think there's a coming together. He does make contact with Mason, but I don't think it was an out of control. I don't think it was reckless. There's maybe a little bit of force, a little bit of aggression, but I didn't think it was a red. And having seen replays, I don't think it was a red, but like you say, I think that they have to be really blatant, obvious mistakes for these things to
almost
be overturned.
Almost mistaken identity or something
exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. And look, I'm sitting here saying I don't think it was a red card, but I didn't think it would be turned over given the high bar that they have.
Yeah, of course, referees only have one chance to look at it without further misery on Derry City's start to the season. And the English FA has submitted a claim to increase the ban on Millwall goalkeeper Liam Roberts after his challenge left Crystal Palace forward Jean-Philippe Mateta needing 25 stitches in his left ear. Roberts dashed out of his goal to deal with a pass forward in the 6th minute of last Saturday's FA Cup tie and collided with Mateta, kicking him in the head. Palace chairman Steve Parrish described it as the most reckless challenge he had ever seen. It was rough, to say the least, Keith.
Yeah, it was really bad. And I have heard a whole host of different opinions on this. And my opinion hasn't changed. And I thought it was an extremely, extremely poor tackle from the goalkeeper. When that ball bounces and he's always favourite to get there first. And I'm sure in a split second decision, he knows he's going to get there first. So for me, he could have went and done a diving header. There would have been contact, but it's a lot better for two people to go smashing into each other than to go in studs first. And the fact that when he comes out and clears the ball, he extends his foot up and that's where the studs are. And Mateta's not a small boy. Mateta's over 6 foot high. So for your foot to be out there and your studs to be up that high, it is really, really dangerous play. And I said, whatever he gets off the back of this, he deserves, because sometimes you go into a tackle, you know, you're professional footballers. You've got to take the opposition player's health into account. And the goalkeeper didn't do anything like that. So I think whatever he gets, if it's a 3-game ban, 5-game ban, if it does get increased, I think he deserves every bit of it, I have to be honest. I thought it was a really reckless challenge.
The most reckless challenge, according to Steve Parrish. What's the most reckless challenge you've seen?
I've seen a couple. I played with some very reckless players back in the day when you were allowed to be.
Hence why I asked the leading question, Keith.
Well, I've been in dressing rooms with Andy Todd. I've been in dressing rooms with Barry Ferguson, Lorenzo Amoruso. It's been a couple of people that could throw a couple of wobbly tackles in. Stefan Onshow at Blackburn. You know, these were lads that weren't backwards about coming forwards. Keith Andrews is one that Irish people will know. He could throw a wobbly tackle in as well every now and then. And I'm talking about training, by the way, not even games. In games, it got 10 times worse. It went up a level. But yeah, look, in all fairness.
Have you ever been on the end of a Keith Andrews level?
A couple, yeah. I remember once when Bornie played Ipswich and he was on the left wing and Keith shouldn't have been out there. And for some reason, I couldn't get to the ball, so I went to block the pass going down the line. And as Keith chipped it down, he scraped his studs down the inside of my leg. And I just looked at him and went, "Keith, what are you doing?" And he went, "Sorry, buddy, I didn't know it was you." And he knew it was me. But that was a tough game. It was Jimmy Bullard and Keith Andrews in the middle of the pitch. It was a real tough, tough game. I had a couple of bruises, but I gave a couple of bruises out that game as well.
No fair man, Keith. That applies to the two, you have to say. Keith Andrews, an absolute gentleman, Keith Andrews. But
I have a lot of time for Keith. Yeah. We were roommates when we played for Ireland together, so I can poke him a little bit.
Keith's a good lad. And finally in snooker, Mark Selby fought back to win the final two frames and beat Jackson Page 4-3 to book his place in the last 16 of the World Grand Prix in Hong Kong this afternoon. Mark Allen was beaten 4-2 by Jimmy Robertson.
Game on. Association football.
But we are chatting Champions League, previewing this evening PSG Liverpool. There's an old German affair, Benfica Barcelona, and Feyenoord Inter ongoing. 25 minutes gone, still scoreless in the Netherlands in that one. However, there was a feast of football last night. Plenty of goals, mostly between PSG and Arsenal. Have you heard the term goal wasting?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean when you say that. I feel like this Arsenal team only has a certain amount of goals in them and we've wasted 7 already. But look, in all fairness, you can only go and play what's in front of you. And I thought Arsenal were brilliant. I thought we were really, really ruthless. Wanyeri is a player who's really, really exciting. Me, only 17 years of age. He turns 18 later this month, but Odegaard, Marino, and look, when you think we've got Saka to come back, I'm very hopeful that we will go out and get a marquee signing. I'm talking 100 million plus, somebody that we can rely on for goals, because I think we have everything we need around, and we've got two very good strong centre halves, a brilliant midfield, and we've got players on the wings that can go and hurt anybody. So yeah, I think we're very close. But look, when you look at Arsenal's XG last night, Shane, my jaw hit the ground when I read this. Arsenal finished the game with an XG of 1.97. So they were really, really ruthless last night. They were as clinical as they could be. So
are you a fan of XG?
I'm not, but like every now and then I like to just have a little glance at it, because it, you know, sometimes you can see a team has 70% possession, you go and have a look at their XG and it's 0.04, and that just gives you a little flavour into what their possession is,
because no, that's fair.
A lot of people put weight into possession, think, oh well, they're dominating the game. Domination of the ball doesn't mean domination of the game for me. So I don't put a lot of weight into it, but I like to have a little glance at it every now and then.
Yeah, you could be just pinging it around the back four, and that's exactly, just working up your passes, completion even, and indeed possession. Club Brugge 1, Aston Villa 3. Villa fortunate to come away with a 2-goal advantage.
Definitely, yeah. Fortunate to come away with a 2-goal advantage. I thought Club Brugge were the better team for long, long periods in the game. I thought Rashford did okay. He seemed a little bit more interested throughout the game. The Bailey goal in the first couple of minutes was a lovely, lovely goal. And it went a little bit static. They both got to 1-1. I thought Vanaken in the middle of the pitch was decent for Brugge. Jutkala, the striker, was really good all night. And Zolas, the Greek winger, was really, really good up until the last minute of the game. There was, for anybody who hasn't seen it, he's in his own 18-yard box. The ball is coming out of the sky and Matty Cash has come on late as a sub and he's got bags and bags full of energy.
Why are you trying to take the touch?
I've no idea. I've absolutely no idea. I'd have kicked it into the stand. I'd have headed it. And especially knowing, like, you take a quick glance, you see it's Matty Cash. You know he's quick. You know he's very, very reactive to stuff. Just help it on somewhere. Get rid of it. Don't do what you did. Give away a penalty. And now Club Brugge have a big, big ask. But they did beat Atalanta 3-1 in the previous round. So although I do feel Aston Villa have one foot into the next round, Club Brugge might be thinking there's still an upset to come.
Okay, they'll have it all to do when they travel to Birmingham. Let us chat about Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and the goals. Like, I'm finding it hard to describe just the beauty of it. And the fact that they kind of just come out of nowhere, even the first week, like, he takes on his man, you're like, all right, he's got a bit about me, might, and then he cuts inside, and just the pace. There's no even backlift on the leg. It's just boom.
What I love about Rodrigo is the way he exploits the space when he, and there's so many examples of it in his first goal. He's only 24 years of age. He goes towards the ball, and usually what coaches would always say to me is make two runs, one run for you and one run for the defender. So you bring the defender towards the ball because you want to exploit the space in behind him. He's not even interested in going towards the ball. He's just nonchalantly walking as if to say, I'm not interested here whatsoever. Has a little glance at the right back, I think it's Valverde. And as soon as they lock eyes, Valverde was excellent as well. As soon as they lock eyes, he's on his bike, he's in behind. The weight of the pass in behind is inch perfect, but once Rodrigo picks it up, the space inside, his second touch is so good because it's inch perfect again. He gets the ball where it needs to be and he makes it look so easy, but dribbling at that pace is not easy. And with a team full of superstars, Rodrigo is one that keeps poking his head above the water and saying, look, I have a bit as well. And I wouldn't say he's understated because people know how good he is, but I think in future now people could be setting up their defence. You know, people are able to deal with Mbappe. I thought Atletico dealt with him largely very, very well last night. So Rodrigo is and Vinicius Jr. obviously very, very dangerous, but I think those two, Rodrigo and Vinicius Jr., are just outshining Mbappe at the minute.
It was a typical Simeone, typical Atletico, sat back a bit, invited the pressure on, try catching the break, try create that moment of madness and magic, and then Julian Alvarez provided.
Yeah, and like you say, I didn't feel like there was a lot on for him. He gets played in down the channel and he checks back in. I think it's Camavinga has a little bit of a nibble at him and he manages to wiggle out of that tackle. He's on the edge of the 18-yard box and I'm convinced he looks up to try and cross it, but there's nobody there, so he decides, look, I'm hitting this.
I'm just going to...
But just kisses the post on the way in. It's absolutely inch perfect. And Courtois, the Real Madrid goalkeeper, is a big, big boy. He has a big wingspan as well. So for that to be inch perfect like it was, it needed to be, and it set the game up there. And Diaz's goal down the other end, he looked to me, he dribbled down a dead end. There's a whole host of Atletico Madrid players around him, but he wiggles free. And then even then, when you're thinking there's no room to get a shot off, he gets a shot off, and again, it's inch perfect right into the corner of the net. So it was a brilliant game. I loved every minute of it, and I absolutely can't wait for the second leg.
Yeah, no, it should be an absolute belter. Describe to me as a footballer, or I don't know, we might need someone with a master's in physics here to describe how he doesn't break his ankle.
Yeah, he looked like he fell over at one point and his ankle had gave way, but he just popped back up, and it's that low centre of gravity. I did it in the back of my head when he did it. I thought that was Messi-esque, and you have to be careful throwing them sort of stuff around. But the dribbling ability was brilliant with so many players around him to wiggle free, get the shot off. It was excellent from Diaz. Yeah.
And he got booked for the celebration. Well, he got booked, I'm assuming, for the celebration. So into the
well, he was in row Z at the time, celebrating with everybody
come on,
else.
Keith, come on. Where's the joy in football? I love VAR and everything else. Shouldn't be getting booked for those. I do want to mention, actually, Luka Modric. What a player. Coming on and just controlling it as well is just phenomenal.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. My last cap for Ireland was against Croatia, and I remember just being fixated on him, just looking at him and looking at him. And again, I was inches away from getting his jersey, but Robbie Keane got in there before me. But to be honest,
what jersey do you get?
I didn't get anybody's.
Oh, no.
It was Modric or bust for me, and I didn't get Modric, so I left it. But I thought he was excellent. Just the way he controls the game. And so often you look at players and you think he's always under pressure. He's always getting tackled. It's because they're not reading the game. That's never a problem with Modric. He's two or three steps ahead in his mental preparation for the game. And his first touch is outstanding. His fitness levels are unbelievable. And obviously he's a very, very good professional when he's away from the training ground. Hence he's still playing at this age. But absolutely evergreen. And thankfully I got to share the pitch with him at one stage, which is, an absolutely brilliant memory.
When you're on the pitch, I know, I suppose when you're on the pitch, you're not looking in awe, you're concentrating at the task at hand and you're trying to perform to the best of your ability. But is there some players that you've played against, Luka in particular, where you kind of just see when he does something or drifts past you or pings that pass, you're like, bloody hell.
Yeah, there is times, there's certain players where you watch out for. When I played against Manchester United once, I remember looking at the passing ability of Scholes, because he was like a quarterback just getting it and spraying it around, and I thought, I just want to see it. And once or twice you try and close him down, but the angles, he just uses you. When you go and try and close Paul's goals down, outside of the left foot, outside of the right. He just uses it as a mannequin to pass around, and then you get you eventually get a pain and think, I'm not going to press him anymore. And he takes a touch and you think the manager's in your ear then, press. And you think, he just knows when to go, when not to go, the tempo of the game. And it looks so easy when you're sitting on an armchair looking at him. You think, I could do what he's doing, but believe me, the way he backs people off, the way he finds space, it's by design. It's never just by luck.
Yeah, the football intelligence is it's ridiculous. Even those goals, perhaps a casual viewer of football or someone who's not a fan might think, geez, that looks easy. Just ping it and let the ball do the work. You're just like, no. To be able to get that curl, get the power, it's just, oh, it is wild stuff. Speaking of wild stuff, we have some matches this evening to preview. PSG against Liverpool. So after finishing top of the standings in the new look Champions League, Liverpool might have been expecting a relatively soft last 16 tie. Instead, the Reds have been drawn against a resurgent PSG side whose recent European feats include a 4-2 victory over Manchester City and a 10-0 aggregate rout of Brest in the playoff round. It's in Paris. I know Liverpool are bang in form, one of the best teams in the world on current form as well, but they'll have it all to do in Paris.
Yeah, PSG are a very, very dangerous team. They've won the last 10 games in a row. They'll be very, very confident, and they very rarely get turned over in Paris in a Champions League home game. PSG in the last 80 home Champions League games, they've won 50, drew 20 and only lost 10. So, look, I do think that if Liverpool go for it, if Liverpool smell blood and decide to try and win this game, I think they could. What Arne Slot is thinking is probably to get them back to Liverpool and get the job done there, because, you know, with the pace of Barcola, Dembele, you are thinking that if Liverpool overextend and get caught in transition, that would be PSG's best bet. But again, I think Liverpool can go about this a whole host of different ways. They're capable of going back and going into a low block and springing out really, really quickly. But look, there's going to be a whole host of talent on show tonight. Fabian Ruiz, Cartier-Gilliatt, Dembele, Barcola, Vitinha. One thing I would highlight, Shane, and it's probably an unpopular opinion, I'm not convinced by Donnarumma, the PSG goalkeeper. I'm just not convinced by him. I think he has
I think that's a growing opinion.
Is it?
Worryingly for Donnarumma as well, who was touted at such a young age as next best thing, the next Buffon, the next best goalkeeper in the world. He's going to dominate for such a long time, because I keep a close eye on goalkeepers and I enjoy that kind of side of the game, and that is one that was highlighted, but prone to a couple of errors, many errors.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, look, I think if you're Liverpool, you've got so many ways to hurt them, with Salah, Diaz, Jota, Szoboszlai is chipping in with goals now as well. But even if PSG are rock solid defensively, you can just start lumping balls into that box. And like I say, I'm not convinced with Donnarumma. You can shoot from distance. He will parry an awful lot of things. And for such a big goalkeeper, I don't think he's as demanding as he can be. He's quite prone to staying on his line. But look, I wouldn't be an expert on goalkeepers, but for some reason, he just doesn't rub me up the right way. Yeah. I'm not convinced at all.
Both clubs having 13-point leads in their domestic leagues, no distraction to chase European glory. How big of a benefit is that for a team?
Massive, yeah. You would imagine that both squads would be feeling it at this time. There's some big games coming up for both teams, but having that little buffer in their both domestic leagues, I do think that a lot of players will be rested. I think Arne Slot will give the spine of his team a rest after this. Generally, he picks, you can generally know what team Arne Slot is going to pick, but I do think he will start giving a couple of the bigger hitters a rest, because they've got their work done really, really early in the Premier League. And look, there's always that little nagging feeling that maybe somebody can catch them. I know Arsenal were absolutely excellent last night, but in terms of going to catch them in the Premier League, I really don't see it. So I think Liverpool could afford to rest a couple of bodies in the Premier League, and PSG the same.
A tough one, or a handy one for Arsenal as well this Sunday. But it depends what way where you look at it, against United on Super Sunday. For Liverpool, just a note as well, if Ibrahim Konate, Andy Robertson, Alexis McAllister or Harvey Elliott are booked, they will miss the return leg. Defenders Joe Gomez and Conor Bradley remain sidelined for the Reds. Tyler Morton is injured. And fellow youngster Amara Nalo is suspended following his red card against PSV Eindhoven when Arne Slot rearranged the deck in the previous round. No injury absentees for the French champions. And you mentioned Ousmane Dembélé and the form he's been on of late as well. And really, sorry, a player in particular that's really taken up the mantle since Mbappe left, to be kind of touted. I know Kvaratskhelia is there, Barcola, but Dembélé is like, I can be the main man, trust me.
Yeah, and look, I really, really like it because it wasn't too long ago that Luis Enrique slapped him on the wrist for being, I think he was late to a team meeting or he turned up late anyway, and basically the gauntlet was threw down that you're not the best professional, we need to be setting a better example, and he's gone the way the manager wants him to go. He does look like a leader. He can go missing in games from time to time, but I think he can throw that at an awful lot of wingers. But yeah, Dembele is one, and if he plays through the middle, you'd imagine Van Dijk and Konate. You know, it's very, very dangerous when a speedster is spinning into channels like that. But for me, I'd put him up against Trent Alexander-Arnold. That's assuming he is starting. I know we haven't got the teams in just yet, but I always look at Trent as a weakness. And I know Liverpool fans would be giving out to me, but at the top level of the game, if you find a weakness, you go after it time and time again. And I think Trent has proven, you know, I think Doku is still dribbling past him from that Manchester City game. He went past him over 20 times. So I think Barcola, Dembele, 1v1 situations with Trent could play a big part in this.
Okay, just a note, Inter have gone one up away to Feyenoord in the early kickoff. Marcus Thuram with the goal there. 39 minutes gone in that clash. Bayern München, Bayer Leverkusen, probably one of the last teams Munich wanted to come up against in the last 16 of the Champions League, and Vincent Kompany's men could be pushed to their limits in the first leg at the Allianz Arena. We were talking about the XG earlier. I'll give you one here, Keith. Bayern's expected goals figure stood at a paltry 0.14 as Leverkusen repelled their opponents with a well-organised, high-pressing approach in their league meeting as well. Not much between the sides, just to kind of get an idea of that. February, nil-all draw at the Bay Arena. Although it finished goalless, Leverkusen dominated, denying Bayern a single shot on target. So on paper, you might think anyone Munich at home, but far from it. This is probably going to be not as exciting in terms of clear-cut chances and free scoring, perhaps.
Yeah, I think we're probably in for more of a tactical battle with these two. I know Xavi Alonso is one who likes to really tinker and get down and dirty with the tactics. But again, I look at the talent on the pitch, and the talent on the pitch is enough to draw me to watch the game. I love Michael Olise. I think he's a brilliant player. Jamal Musiala, the way he dribbles, his low centre of gravity, the way he can manipulate the ball. Leroy Sané is still another one that is doing it at the top level. And Harry Kane, you know, he's an absolute goal machine. And look, there's so many. Florian Wirtz is a German player I really like. Ronaldo, Frimpong, Granit Xhaka, he's reinvented himself since he left Arsenal. I know he was labelled a liability while he was at Arsenal. He got an awful lot of red cards, lost a header a lot, but he seems to have matured into that captain. And
there's a man who loves a wobbly tackle.
He could throw in a wobbly tackle, yeah, but he seems to have matured. He doesn't seem to lose the head as much. He seems to be really, really matured. So yeah, I like it. I think there's going to be very, very little in that game. I would expect Bayern to maybe eat through, but make no mistake about it, I wouldn't be surprised if Leverkusen go through. It really is a toss of a coin in that one.
Well, Bayern, of course, eked past Celtic. Alphonso Davies in the second, like a 94th minute strike. Celtic fans won't want me reminding them
that wasn't a strike. That was a tackle into the back of the net.
It was a wobbly shot. Actually, Leverkusen have not lost away to German opposition in any competition since May 2023.
Very nice. This is like a game of top trumps. Bayern Munich are unbeaten in 21 home Champions League games.
Moving on to Benfica Barcelona. Barcelona twice fought back, I should say, from two goals down to prevail in a 9-goal epic at Benfica in the league phase of the Champions League, and the Catalan Giants can triumph in another lively encounter on their return to Lisbon for the opening leg of the last 16 tie. I know football is not won on paper, but still, you would imagine Barcelona would be favourites heading into this.
Yeah, I you know, you look at Barcelona, nobody needs me to tell them about young Lamine Yamal, an absolute superstar already. You know, you had the weight of Spain on his shoulders, and he seems to rise to the big occasion. Lewandowski, the old head through the middle. Dani Olmo in the number 10 position. He's a really, really classy player. And Rafinha, Pedri, Frankie de Jong. There's so many good players there. Pavlidis will play through the middle for the opposition. And again, I've highlighted Trent Alexander-Arnold from a PSG point of view. When you find a weakness, keep going at it. Nicolas Otamendi will play centre-half, or I assume he will play centre-half for Benfica. 37 years of age, you would imagine that if young Lamal can get in and around him, he will have too much from him to be able to get away from him. But it's up to Benfica. Are they going to play a low block and try and break them down and spring out from there, or are they going to full court press? Either way, I do think Barcelona will come out on top.
Okay, great stuff as well. We failed to mention Dortmund-Lille, actually, that finished 1-1 last night. And interestingly, Ethan Mbappe made his debut, Kylian's younger brother. So finally balanced ahead of the return leg in France. Approaching half-time between Feyenoord and Inter, it is still 1-0 to Inter. We're going to have to take a break and turn our attention to Gaelic games. Keith, before I let you go, just because I have you here, Rovers Pats, of course, on Friday, Dublin Derby. Who's going to come out on top?
Pats.
Concise, Keith Tracy. Gentlemen, Keith, thank you so much for popping into the studio. We are taking a break and then we're going to chat to Nadine Doherty, chat to Aoife Murray, but up straight away will be Damien Lawler with the latest Gaelic game stories, and we'll hear from Tipperary hurling captain Ronan Marr.
Game on.
Hurling.
Now, Damien Lawler is on the line with all the latest GAA stories. In terms of match action, hurling takes centre stage this weekend. Tipperary are flying in the league. They're away to Kilkenny on Sunday. So before we chat to Damien, we can hear from Tip captain Ronan Marr ahead of that much-anticipated Allianz League clash. Ronan was reflecting on a good campaign to date.
Really good start, I suppose. Three from four is good. And considering the tough league that we're in this year, it's really beneficial, I think, for a team like us that are looking to improve every day we go out, learning lots of new things about ourselves. But good start, a really good start to the league, and hopefully come down to Nola Park here the weekend and just aiming to put in a really good performance again, and hopefully the result goes our way. But the main thing, getting a good performance.
Is it great to be back out hurling again? But say, I said, would the winter have been tough enough? Like, I know how much you love the game and how seriously you take it, and maybe your dark time maybe during the winter, and once the club campaign is over too, and you're kind of wondering, can we get this back on the road here now?
Yeah, it's a really tough place to be after being knocked out last year, and you'd have lots of questions and I suppose demons running through your mind about. But yeah, the sooner you get back together as a group, the better. And you're only waiting for the opportunity to get back in. And it was tough. But like that, we've blocked it all out now. We spoke about what we'd speak about last year. And
you have to block it out,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, and we've moved on and we've took our learnings from it. And that's what like a young group like ourselves have to do. And I think the focus has really been good, really good at the start. And training has been really good. So it's a lot of learnings for a young team like ourselves after last year. And but like I said, once we got back together and put the heads down, spoke about what to speak about, it's good to be back.
And it's possibly even, it looks even younger this year again, but I suppose a lot of the lads have been in doing development work last year, and that's maybe standing to them. Just blending in them young lads and trying to take the bit of pressure off them, you know, is that something like maybe a senior player like yourself has to maybe take on as well, indirectly, apart from looking after your own game?
Yeah, it's something that you have to do, and you have to look out for those lads, I suppose, every day you're out in the field as well. But like these lads that have broken onto the squad this year have been really good, and they maybe got a small bit of insight into it last year, but this year they've been really good. And like, they're a very mature group of players for their age. They've their heads screwed on, like they've had success in underage as well, so yeah, they know what it is. They know how to win, which is really good for us as well, and it's very refreshing. But like I said, they're very mature for their age. They're highly driven, driving standards within training and set up the whole time. That's what needs to happen as well, and it's really good to see that coming forward.
Tipperary's Ronan Marr speaking to Damien Lawler there. So, Damo, always a belter when these two sides meet, and perhaps a bit of extra edge as Tip by a league final, but more pressingly perhaps, Kilkenny might be looking over their shoulder a bit of the prospect of relegation.
Well, they certainly won't want to lose, Shane. Clare and Wexford are in a bit of a bother in terms of looking at the wrong side of the rearview mirror. Tipperary are going well so far, but it is only the first weekend of March. But at home to Tipperary in Nolan Park, well, Kilkenny don't usually give up a whole lot there. So this will be a ferocious battle. Meanwhile, Tipperary then have got a little bit of momentum after a horrible year last year, and they won't want to concede anything at this stage, even though it's only early days. But you know, I keep making a point, it's only the league, but we can't say this anymore, because quite simply the championship's only 50 days away, and if you lose form now or get injuries, there's no magic switch you can flick on straight away to make sure that you can get your reform back for the championship. But look, just to give a snapshot of each county, Kilkenny are averaging about 23 points a game. They'll need to get that by 7 or 8 if they want to be All-Ireland contenders. It's the likes of Mossy, Keown, people like that are really driving it on, but they probably need more consistency up front. They have a good, strong cellar defence, but they probably need more firepower. Tipperary then, a lot of new faces, as Ronan mentioned. 6 debuts in the Galway game alone at the start of the year. They really have to make up time for a horrible season last year, but behind the scenes, they're working hard. County Board's working hard. You know, a lot of money needed for Semple Stadium. They have a long way to travel, but they're on that journey back anyway. So, look, it'll be a great game, I can imagine, if the conditions stay dry and not too windy. I think we'll be in for a fascinating battle.
OK. Elsewhere, Limerick host Galway, while Cork play Clare in Ennis, and a lot to be decided in Division 1B as well, with Carlow away to Dublin, Leash and Antrim, Westmeath at home to Waterford. We'll preview all of those matches later on in the week. Damien, from hurling to football and the real changes, they're still dominating the headlines throughout this league campaign. Conor Neville had a great piece on the RT Sport website detailing the growing divide between the FRC and some inter-county managers. I heard Jim Gavin on Morning Ireland this week after the FRC met for the 50th time on Monday night, where, as expected, tweaks were put forward following discussion. So what is the next step now, and what can we expect?
Yeah, look, at my gut feeling anyway, Shane, is that for the league final, you'll see two or three adjustments. Now, it's been reported on, speculated on, that there'll be no changes before the championship. However, I still feel that the league final, if you bring in your two or three adjustments there in that final, it won't affect the integrity of the competition. And also, you'll get it road tested before the start of the provincial championship. In my mind, you can't go into a championship with two or three adjustments hanging over you. Obviously, you can't affect the integrity of the league. So the league finals then are the places to do it, in my opinion. What's been looked at? Well, managers castigated the rules in various stages or circumstances last weekend. Hooters, the goalkeepers coming out, the black and red cards, and how it left the three up top dynamic. There was no shortage of criticism from a wide variety of sources. But this is a process that will only be finalised in special Congress in the first weekend of October. They'll only come into place permanently for next year's championship, or next year's league, the 2026 season. So we're only a few weeks into the 2025 season. And I don't think Mick Quirk had a great line during the week. It only major surgeries needed, maybe a few stitches applied to a few cut wounds at this stage. And by that I mean the 12 versus 11, Division 3 and Division 4 goalkeepers, with the exception of one or two, including Paddy Domican and Roche, they're not bringing out the goalkeepers, really. Secondly, if you have an exciting talent like Niall Morgan or Ethan Rafferty, why would you want to curtail them? You know, so I've a funny feeling the goalkeeper will be allowed to take part in proceedings up front, but I think it'll be an 11 versus 11. I think if your goalkeeper comes up, you're going to have to drop an extra player back into your own half. So I think that will be one adjustment, in my opinion. The black card, red card scenario, they might have a look at that, that you might have to leave two up top in such a scenario, not three. The hooter, to me, it's sticking out that the hooter sounds, and then you end the game with the next time that the ball goes over the bar, in the back of the net, or over the opposition end line. So that's the way, or either end line, that's the way I'd end it. It would take away all the uncertainty over that. And maybe the tweaks I'd be making. I don't think I'd be making a whole lot more. There was talk about the opponents putting the ball in the ground, not handing it back to their opponent, but that might affect the solo and go. And also, that's probably something that's actually naturally coming into our game more and more. Players are just getting on with it now. So, Shane, there will be adjustments, but I don't think there'll be too many. And I think you might see them for the league final, even though all the speculation is there won't be any changes until the championship. So changes versus adjustments, what's your definition of each? Bottom line, an awful lot of work gone into this. Overall, it's going quite well. There have been some breakdowns over the last few weeks. Breakdowns from the process of information, from the transfer of information from the FRC to the Playing Rules Committee, to the various county boards, to the actual teams, to the actual teams manager. There's definitely been breakdowns in communication along the way. That hasn't helped the scenario. It's resulted in a wicked weekend of criticism. But maybe a lot of people have to look at themselves in terms of their performance, and maybe you know, how they reacted after games as well. So all I'm saying is, my gut feeling is there won't be many adjustments, and they might take place on league final stage.
Okay, that's very interesting, as soon as the league final. Damien, before we let you go, I see the GPA had a meeting with Taoiseach Micheál Martin, centred around funding stemming from the GPA publication of the Assessment of Economic and Social Impacts of Intercounty Gaelic Football Code and Hurling Players in Ireland. Quite the mouthful.
Easy for you to say, Shadow.
Might we see anything meaningful come from it?
Well, yeah, look, it is. And I think my information is they also met with the Minister Charlie McConnell in the Department of Sport as well. So I think if you look at the stuff I've spoken about in the programme in the past, demographics, the GEA in general and their impact on social Irish economy, and the GPA, well, you know, let's be honest about it. The government have given the GEA lots of money in the last few weeks. Few years. Certainly in the last few months, the figure has been, you know, astounding. But the GEA, the GPA are now arguing strongly that, you know, they're giving back an awful lot more. GPA would argue that their inter-county activity would generate 529 million per year. GEA would argue that their social value is like 1.2 billion per year. So like it's a lot of arguments being put forward back to the government. And the GPA went to visit the Taoiseach. He listened to them. At the moment, the GPA recently released a statement, a report stating how a player can take in, maybe he can lose up to maybe, I suppose he can lose a significant figure, including €127,000 over lifetimes of playing intercounty sport. Now, figures like that are you know, they're easy to put out there, but I suppose you've had an independent commission report getting this out. There are perks to being an intercounty footballer, possibly sponsored cars, possibly perks in your local community. Maybe you get, you know, your grants and all that. But the GPA are making the point that despite all of these, you know, perks or grants, intercounty players are investing more time than ever. They're generating more money than ever, but they're incurring personal losses at the end of the year. So they went to speak to the Taoiseach and the Minister for Sport. Shane O'Donnell, Gemma Begley and Tom Parsons were the delegation. And it'll be interesting to see. But I think my sources say it was a positive meeting for them, and they're hopeful that there could be some reaction to it soon.
OK, great. So if we leave the conversation there for now, Damien Lawler, thank you as always.
Game on. Ladies football.
Now, we are chatting ladies football with Nadine Doherty. Just to update you, it is still Inter 1, Feyenoord 0 at halftime in the early Champions League match. Nadine, there's no matches for us to preview this weekend because there are no Division 1 or 2 fixtures. There are, however, Division 3 and a few Division 4 fixtures. But the big talking point this weekend is the LGFA Congress 2025 taking place in Letterkenny, Donegal. And President and Sligo man Micheál Nochtain has called his adopted county of Donegal home for over 25 years, and he is handing over the presidency to Westmeath's Trina Murray, becoming only the fifth female to hold the position in 50 years. So the changing of the guard,
yeah,
for the LGFA.
Yeah, very much so. So as I'm lucky enough to know both very well, and I've worked with both in different capacities. I know Micheál since I was a child. He's been involved in football in Donegal for a long time. His club four masters. He brought players through underage up to senior. He's just worked tirelessly through the association for such a long time, and fully deserved his presidency. Served it very well. You know, I suppose it'd be an honour for him to have been on that steering committee. He was part of what will be history. I have no doubt that Micheál will not be stepping away from the LGFA at all, and he'll still remain involved in a huge way. But I hope he takes a bit of a rest, because he's really, really put in the work over the last 4 years. So I wish him well.
Even from looking from the outside in, and I know you're heavily involved and you would have been throughout your career, but from a personal perspective, seeing him, he's always kind of front and centre, and I've never heard a bad word said about him either. He seems to be a great representative.
Absolutely.
And a great advocate for
absolutely. And I mean, you talk about putting in the mileage and the hours, you know, as we said, he lives in Donegal. Micheál could be in Cork on a Monday, Dublin on a Tuesday, somewhere in the Midlands on a Wednesday. So he deserves a rape. But yeah, look, he's a great guy, and as I said, he will stay involved because he's very important to have people like Micheál in the association. And listen, Trina's lovely lady. I did a leadership course with Trina, and again, she's just been involved in the association for so long, and it's just great to have a woman back at the helm as well, which would be great. So I wish her the very, very best in her new position.
Absolutely. A great day for Westmeath indeed. Westmeath's Trina Murray becoming, as I said, the fifth female to hold the position in 50 years. Speaking of presidents, actually, in terms of motions, there's a few kind of broadly speaking, but a large talking point, I would imagine, is, of course, integration and this ongoing issue or process of integration, not an issue as such. And former President of Ireland, of course, Mary McAleese, is the independent chairperson overseeing all of this progress. And Marty Morrissey, our own Gaelic Games correspondent, was speaking to Miss McAleese, and we can hear a snippet of that interview now.
There has been a mass of work, Marty. Now, it's all been in the background because not an awful lot of it would be visible yet up front, because there are so many moving parts. Facilities, fixtures, finance, constitution, staffing. We want to move towards everybody in a one club, one membership, one county board covering everything, one provincial council covering everything. So we're moving in that direction, and what we have been doing for the last year is drawing in the best of advice. Bearing in mind, these are all people with busy lives who are, you know, who are amateurs, and we're bringing all these people together in a series of groups, series of working parties who have been advising us. We've been collating all that information, getting it ready for go, for the day when we say the job is done. But by 2027, we will have one organisation, one membership, equality of membership all the way down the line. And we need now, for all the people who want that to happen, and we know it is 99% of all those associations, we need them to get moving to do that.
So is 2027 a realistic target? Could you do it beforehand?
It's not a target, it's a destination. It's not a target. Oh, no, it's not a target. We have said by 2027, one organisation. One organisation, one Congress. And that's what we will have by 2027. We're knocking our brains in to make sure that happens, to be honest. We've a great team. I couldn't thank the people who are doing this enough. I really couldn't. They commit with it. You know, when we ask them to do it, when the working parties are put together and we ask them, say, can you give us a report in 6 weeks? You know, they commit. They're brilliant. That's the GAA for you. That's the LGFA. That's the Camogie Association. They have the most extraordinarily committed people, and they have the vision. They know this is the future.
Mary McAlee speaking to Marty Morrissey. It's not a target, it's a destination.
You don't question Mary McAlee, see?
You absolutely do not.
And if you do, you don't get away with it.
It's very true.
I know, in all seriousness, Shane, listen, you know, just listening to her there, I would be very, very surprised if the targets that the steering committee have set themselves and the structures that they know need to be implemented, I would be so surprised if they're not in place by 2027. And then it's going to be hand the baton to the people on the ground, those of us in the association who have to do the things that make it tangible. Mm. As she said, they're doing them tangible. That's fair enough. We don't know half of it, but it's the important bits. And I would have confidence that they will have their job done by 2027.
OK, here's hoping. Very confident sounding Mary McAleeson. Hopefully there is confident words spoken at Congress this weekend in Letterkenny in County Donegal. Let us review last weekend's round five matches. So Nadine, Dublin had a big win, 219 to 9 points over Meath. Did anyone see? Maybe they saw the victory coming, but a victory of that gap?
Yeah, not a victory of that gap, but when you looked at the team sheet and you saw the few changes in the personnel, it was no coincidence, Shane, that it was Dublin's best performance and biggest win so far this year. When you looked through their panel and who started, they had 13 players featuring on Sunday who have All-Ireland medals. And for me, and I've spoken about it so often on the show, their forward line included Carla Rowe, Kate Sullivan, Caoimhe O'Connor and Hannah Turrell came on and made an appearance. I think O'Connor and Rowe in particular, Shane, they just completely changed the pace, the directness of the Dublin attack. And if every coach showed clips to their half-forwards of Caoimhe O'Connor's lines of running, football in Ireland would be changed overnight. She is just phenomenal. And I think to note as well with both of those players, they bring out the best in others around them. And just to pick out one player, Niamh Heatherton, you know, great footballer, but I feel with Niamh, when she has to be the central attacker, I think the pressure gets to her a little bit, whereas the pressure was totally taken off her on Sunday. She absolutely thrived and she had her best game to date. So look, these girls bring the best out of those around them. I think other factors in their win, and the biggest one was young Grace Coss in the middle of the field. She just followed Vicky Wall like a radar all around the pitch, and Vicky could not get her hands on the ball. So that was a huge factor. She nullified the threat, Meath's biggest threat, I suppose. Dublin dominated Meath's long kick out. They went zonal, they squeezed the space, so Meath had to go short, and then Dublin put a high press on, and Meath really were under pressure inside their 21, Shane. Physically, Dublin, listen, they absolutely battered Meath on the ball, off the ball, 50-50 tussles. Ailish O'Dowd is back. She was like a wrecking ball around that middle third. She was absolutely phenomenal. And listen, defensively, again, they didn't concede a goal. And a huge thing, Shane, that people might notice, Dublin players are able to play off both sides. And that's a legacy that Mick Bohan will always leave in the capital. And, you know, the ability to not have to turn on to your better side every time you're trying to offload the ball means the pace of your game just stays incredibly high so often. So that's what they can do. And look, me, they'll be incredibly disappointed, Shane. Ciara Smith, I want to pick out in particular. She was their best performer. She tried really hard. She linked the play. But just overall, it was a poor day for them. And look, I can't really see them progressing any further in the league. They have Armand Kerry in the next few rounds. So I think for them, it's going to be back to the training pitch to really focus on Leinster because, you know, they lost Kildare. They lost to Dublin, so they'll be looking to prepare for that now over the next few weeks.
Okay, with an eye on the championship then, Armagh 215, Kildare 17. Armagh, All-Ireland runners up in 06, never won an All-Ireland title. I think Monaghan were the last team from Ulster to win it in the 90s, Cavan back in the 70s. They're 100% in the league, so are we putting them in already as serious contenders?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I would always say, you know, spring football in women's football gives you more of an insight than it does in men's. You know, with men's, like the league is the league or whatever, but you know, this Armagh team, of all the years that they have the potential to win an All-Ireland, because of how well they're going, because of having a full squad and Amy McIndoe to come back in, and also because the playing field is so level, Shane, I think they have a massive opportunity. And another little fun fact on that 2006 runners-up team, Caroline O'Hanlon played in that game.
The evergreen, ever-essent
Caroline O'Hanlon. So yeah, look, definitely, Shane, they're massive contenders. They're playing with the confidence of league champions, which they are defending league champions, but they're also playing with the confidence of a team who very much have their eye on things further on in the summer.
Okay, just very briefly, Nadine, big win for Waterford, 6-15 to 6 points against Tyrone, and Kerry 2-8 to Mayo, 4 points. A result that all but confirms Kerry Armagh is probably going to be a league final and Mayo probably going to get relegated.
Yeah, I think it's lights out for Mayo, Shane, and I've said this before, unless something changes off the pitch in Mayo, I think Mayo are actually in danger of relegation from the Championship, and I know it's quite early in the year, but there's no indications on the pitch, off the pitch, that they are going to improve at all, so I think they're in big danger.
Okay, tough times ahead for Mayo, and just on one B Division 2, you would imagine Cork and Galway will get promoted, both top with 12 points at the moment. We will preview all of the next round's fixtures next week. Nadine Doherty, thank you as always.
Game on. Camogie.
But we are finishing the show chatting camogie in the company of Aoife Murray, because last weekend Cork and Galway both made it 2 wins from 2 in the league, but champions Tipperary are hot on their heels after recording a 16-1 local derby win over Kilkenny in what was a cracker of a contest in Division 1A. Probably the match of the weekend, Aoife?
Yeah, it was, in fairness, albeit Tipperary winning well at the end, and probably they're very much happy with how they closed out that game. There was a bit of a scare towards the end, and if you take the weekend before where they allowed Waterford, when Dublin came back at them and took a draw, I think they'd be very happy of closing out that game. But, you know, it's still a big win over Kilkenny, and Kilkenny in a spot of bother now coming into this weekend. But certainly for Tipperary, especially with carrying a few injuries into this, giving other players a bit of time to kind of come into it, I think it was a big, big win for Tip.
You mentioned Kilkenny spot of bother. 2 defeats from 2 going in now this weekend against Cork, or 2 wins from 2. It's in Páirc Uí Chaoimh as well, which is going to make matters even harder for Kilkenny. Would Kilkenny fans, should they be concerned? Or is it a case of, listen, it's only week 3 of the league?
I think they would be a little bit concerned. In a sense, well, I'm a little bit concerned for them. Coming into their third game, facing Cork down the park, acres of space. Cork, in fairness, from that first game when I was watching them, looked super fit. Physically, they were in great shape. They did not look like a team that was just setting out on a league journey. They seemed so well advanced in that kind of S&C and the fitness stages. 2 games down under Cork's belt, now playing Kilkenny down the park, I would be concerned for Kilkenny. This is a must win for them in the sense of not going into the last games of the league being bottom of the table. That is probably the biggest concerning point that I would have for Kilkenny.
Concerning times for Kilkenny, how impressed then have you been with Cork? Because they had a big win over Dublin. Now, perhaps it was expected that they would defeat Dublin, but overall, broader picture, how impressed have you been with their start to the league?
Oh, I've been really, really impressed. And in fairness, even that first game against Waterford down in the park, like, for me, it was more interesting to see who wasn't playing than who was playing in the sense of so many of their star players that have 5-6 plus All-Irelands were sitting in the stand, and Cork looked effortless. Now, I think they'll be annoyed with that first game in the sense of they had the foot on Waterford's throat and they didn't finish it. They let Waterford come back in and looked a little bit lacklustre in the second half, right? But you have to give them, it's the first round of the league. But the amount of, I suppose, new players or young players with less than, say, a few of the more experienced players' mileage in their legs, they looked like they knew exactly what the system was. They knew how to play it. Okay, maybe the execution of it, not their first round of the league, forgiveness. Coming into Dublin, for me, the big thing was, you know, they hit when they had a purple patch on Saturday, like they hit 10 points. And I think they had like so many different scores, 8, 9 different scores. McCartan coming out on top with 8. To me, was that spread of 1 or 2 points across, 8, 9 players going away down to the half back line. getting your halfbacks on the scoreboard. I think that is the difference at the minute with Cork than other teams, their ability to spread the scoring around, not just to their forwards and not to the centre fielders, but that potent halfback line.
Finally, Aoife, then Galway 15 points, Waterford 1-9. Is this match, or is the result of this match, kind of example of how the top division will probably end up, with Cork, Galway, Tipperary in the top half, Dublin, Kilkenny, Waterford in the bottom half as such?
Pretty much, and I don't want to say the league is over in that sense, but the way it's shaping up, I think you do have Cork, Galway and then Tipperary getting that win really changed things around. Really changed things around for them. And I think going into this weekend, that Galway-Tip match could be the bit that actually, or that's the match for me that'll probably dictate who might meet Cork in the final.
Okay, lots to look forward to. Aoife Murray, thank you so much for taking the call. Nadine Doherty, thank you for popping into the studio. Big thanks to John Farrell and Laura Lee Davis working on this evening's show. Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow. The new music show with Dermot O'Brien is up next as soon as we check in with the news desk. So do stay tuned to 2FM. I'll speak to you at 6 tomorrow.